Hans and Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. The great Tim. You know what? Here's the great thing about Tim Lacombe is he's just the best dude on the planet. You know, he's just a good dude.
He's a great dude. He is a basketball savant. He is very handsome with his new look.
Yeah,
very handsome and wealthy. So that those are all good things.
I think he just nailed it.
Mind, body, and spirit.
Mind, body, and spirit. Tim Lacombe joining us. Hey, Coach, how are you?
What's up, Coach?
I feel like I just missed a couple pieces of that. Were you guys talking about Jake Scott?
Oh no!
I don't even.
I heard mind, body, and spirit. I heard handsome. I heard wealthy. I know. It wasn't anything you were talking about.
Oh, no, that's all you. You know, look, you still rock the suits every now and then. I went to Jake's wedding back in 2013. I don't think he's worn a suit since then.
No. No, Jake is he's pretty, you know, he wears that Hartford Whalers hat quite a bit.
Yeah.
That thing looks like it was purchased in '06. And then, you know, the little derby hat he wears, like the golfing hat, is cool.
Yeah.
Jake's got a cool look. He's very authentic.
Well, he owns it too. And that's the thing. You know, there's no trying to fit any norm anywhere. He's like, that's my look. I'm going to go with it, and you either like it or you don't. Hey, I had an argument with a member of the Utah State coaching staff, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Best Def Leppard song, Pour Some Sugar on Me or Photograph?
Like, are you saying best song out of the two, or I don't think either one's their best song.
Really?
I'll choose one of the two.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I thought that would be one of the two. I went Photograph.
I'd go Photograph. Yeah, Pour Some Sugar on Me is a stadium rocker. Doesn't translate great, like, over time. It's just becomes kind of a
cliche.
I like it, don't get me wrong. But yeah, it's just too stadium for me. But Photograph out of those two for sure.
Okay, but it you said, because Rock of Ages is my favorite Def Leppard song all time. So what is your, yeah, what did you say your favorite was?
Typically I go to deep slices, you know, kind of the way you guys are with food. You know, for me, like Photograph's like a Whopper.
Yeah.
I like to go down the menu a little bit and get something. I would probably say, just off the top of my head, that Gods of War is one of my favorite songs by Def Leppard.
Good call.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And maybe even something off of like the older stuff, like High and Dry, some of the older songs there. But again, I'm a freaking music idiot.
So. Well, no, that's why... That's why we need to get you on to talk music more often, because our guy Hans here sometimes needs a little bit of help musically.
Oh, come on. That isn't entirely true. I have some unique taste.
I want to picture this. This is my vision of what Hans would be like in Weezer. I like to call it Weezer because it's more like the beer than the band. But up there in Weezer, I would guess – you had a Ford Bronco missing a door or something. Then you saran wrap the door on.
With the gun rack.
Gun rack definitely had some horns of some animal on the front, kind of. I mean, am I close?
You know, we actually discussed this earlier in the show, and you're not far off.
You come along.
No, you didn't. You talked about
We talked about the first segment.
Yeah, we did.
Holy cow. Like, I didn't listen to you guys, so this must be, like, God wants to talk about this.
Yes.
Because we were talking about 1994 was the last time the Cleveland Browns won a postseason game. 1994, I was driving a 77 Cadillac Eldorado, and it was a soft top, but the soft top had been ripped off and was all gnarled, and my dad drilled, instead of having any type of animal horns on it, my dad drilled a massive fan blade right into the front bumper. So when I drove, it would spin, which is pretty cool.
I knew you had something cool. Because you don't just, like, pop out as cool as you are and it's fun. without some pretty cool life experience.
Hey, and Scotty, to fight back on your comment about radio, it had an 8-track, and my two tapes were Captain and Tennille, and Kenny Rogers. That was my 2 8-track tapes that I had.
So I was... Love will keep us together. Think of me, babe, whenever.
I know that song word for word because I listen every morning on my way to school.
Dude, my parents raised me on the Tennille, the Cap.
And the old 8-tracks, man. Nothing wrong with that.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. I came in and bogarted all
No,
stuff.
No, you're all good.
Talk about.
Let's talk some jazz, because on Friday, when last time Hans were on the air, Hans and I were on the air, it seemed like the world was coming to an end. And now things are rolling again. So what did you see out of these last two games that have gotten the Jazz out of that two-game funk they were at the end of last week?
Well, you know, we got to talk about the Bucks game. You know, I think that was one, if you could pull everybody after those two losses, against the Nets and the Knicks, I would imagine that most would say that the Jazz have zero shot against the Bucks. And, you know, they came out and just played really, really well. Most importantly, and I'm going to harp on this a ton because I think it really is a differentiator for this team. When they get out and run and get some early baskets in transition, you know, the defense does not set. They can't, you know, start sitting on rolls and all that in transition. So if you can race that ball up the floor like the Jazz did against the Bucks, and get some early baskets, that's always good. They obviously shot the crap out of the ball from three, but I think this team's capable of shooting it like that. You know, not every night because. But I think that most nights they're going to shoot the ball fairly well. It really is just a mindset thing where I think we saw it in the first half, last night's game or yesterday's game against Detroit. You know, the Jazz did a really good job coming out, pushing it. You know, Donovan was awesome to start. But I noticed like that first half, they were really forceful in playing on direct lines, you know, catching it, surveying what they had, and guys did a great job of breaking their guy down and creating help, which then starts the blunder. And then we saw a stark contrast to that in the second half. You know, sometimes you get a lead, and, you know, I think Hans, you can speak to this. Scotty, you know, watching the Aggies over the years and myself, sometimes when you get a big lead, mentally you check the box and say, all right, now I'm going to go get my stats. I'm going to go pump my numbers. I'm going to go work on my contract, you know, all the different things that I can get if I do certain things. And sometimes that, you know, the focus gets a little bit off. And I felt like second half, the Jazz just did not play with as much force. But fortunately, they had built the lead up. And you know, and the other thing yesterday, they won on their defense. You know, they did a great job holding Detroit, who had scored, you know, they were averaging way higher than 86, and the Jazz held them to that. So I think there were a bunch of positive things, but I'm certainly not a guy who lives and dies, you know, with every possession. I see that as presently constituted, this Jazz team can really do some damage throughout the year.
All right, so just ran some quick numbers. I started out the show talking about Mike Conley because I'm starting to feel like Mike Conley is a big part of the engine and is becoming kind of the X factor between what Donovan and Rudy Gobert are doing, but the X factor in regards to wins and losses. And I was just looking at this. In this 5-game road trip, the Jazz are now 2-3. And in their 3 wins, Mike Conley is averaging 21.75 points and 6.75 assists in those wins. In the 2 losses, he's averaging 8.5 points and 5.5 assists. Mike Conley, and then you talked about the transition and getting active right out of the gates. You know, you go back and watch that San Antonio game or that Clippers game, and Mike Conley's active right out of the gates, hitting some big shots. I want you to talk about Mike Conley, his evolution to where he is now, just from his first year till now, and Mike Conley's importance to the wins and losses when it comes to Jazz play.
Well, I think, you know, Mike does so many things that, you know, obviously scoring the ball, assisting the ball, but I really think the thing that I'm really starting to see is the chemistry that he's got with the leadership on the team. You know, every single break, it seems, you know, when the camera kind of pulls back, he and Donovan are discussing things, or he and Rudy are discussing things. You know, I think he's made huge strides in trying to figure out how to fit on this team. You know, this has been a narrative that's been talked about a bunch, but came to the league in 2007 and was in the exact same location from 7 to 19, playing with familiar faces. You know, as guys came in, got to know him, you know, it's been made, a lot's been made of his playing alongside Marc Gasol and how Mark's more of a pick and pop guy. And it really is a different thing. You know, it's not just something that people talk about, but being able to come off a ball screen and immediately flip it to your big, you know, on a pick and pop, and know that big other big's got to get back to Gasol. The difference between that, and him playing with Gobert and holding the ball just a little bit longer. And I've seen this year, you know, he's made some real big time plays, to wait just a second longer, or to bounce the bounce pass a little higher for Rudy as Rudy's rolling, or to put it on the other side of the rim. You know, he just started to kind of figure out the intricacies in playing with Rudy, who's a rolling big man as opposed to a popping big man. And I think there's a comfort level there. I mean, if you look at his numbers across the board, and I mean, the one thing I said all last year when people were up in arms about Conley and Conley's play, you know, give it some time. You know, it may not happen in year one. And then obviously last year with all COVID and everything else was crazy. But if you look at his numbers right now through 10 games, his field goal percentage is near, you know, 0.3 below his career high. He's shooting 45-6 from the field. And in like 2000 and I can't remember the year, 2016-17, I think he was shooting 45-9. The biggest number that's really jumped up from this year is three-point shooting. He's shooting a career best if it were to stay this way right now. He's a 37.6 career three-point shooter. And right now he's shooting 42.5% from three. All those numbers just lead me to believe that this guy's feeling way more comfortable. And like you said, I think he's a catalyst to being able to attack. He's another guy that can attack off the bounce, get into the paint and create, you know, an opportunity to move the ball and get the blender started. So I'm a huge Mike Conley guy, always have been. I think from the standpoint of his leadership, the way he carries himself, I love the fact that he's never had a technical foul in all his years. I mean, it speaks volumes about, you know, his ability to control situations and understand it. So I think Mike Conley, Hans, has been a huge part of the Jazz. You know, in the games they play well, you know, he's a huge part of that.
Tim Lacombe joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network, Jazz radio analyst. When you look at Donovan Mitchell, and what really has impressed me with him and his development is superstars and bulk scorers like him, you know, they can be aggressive nonstop, but that may not be to the utmost, that may not help out the team that much. Yesterday, comes out, scores 13 in the first quarter. You can tell he wanted to be aggressive early on and then pulled it back a little bit, got the big lead, and then fell back into more of a facilitator, making sure things were running smoothly. Just how hard of a line is that to walk for guys like that? And do you feel like he's getting close to kind of figuring out when to pick and choose his moments?
I think it's a really hard line to walk. You know, that whole idea in basketball, whether it be, you know, from a team standpoint or an individual, but that whole idea of understanding push and pull, when do I need to be ultra aggressive? When do I need to defer? And I think, you know, I think there's two spots in games. I think early in a game, particularly in transition, I've seen Donovan have a ton of success by just either getting the rebound himself or getting the outlet and pushing that to the rim. I think those are opportunities for Donovan to start the game and get himself going in transition. And then in the half court, I've been so impressed with his assists. He's on a track right now to, you know, in the 4 years he's been here, he's on the highest assist track that he's been on right now. He's averaging 5 assists per game. And I think that's a really big number for him because, I think the more multifaceted he can become, I think the one issue right now, he hasn't really clicked with off the bounce threes, but his catch and shoot threes are off the chart. You know, he's shooting 35% this year from three, but I would say it's in watching and listening to David Locke every day on podcast and on the broadcast, you know, his catch and shoot threes are more in the 50% range or higher. So I think it's just a matter of knowing where your spots are. My thought is early in the game, push it in transition. Late in the game, you know, finish the game through isolation. And Donovan's proven he can do that. You know, last year in the bubble was an unbelievable opportunity to watch a guy just take games over. So early, late, and then just figuring out, you know, how to facilitate. But he's definitely making strides, you know, in that regard. If you look at his assists, they've climbed from 3.7 first year, 4.2 second year, 4.3 third year, and he's up to 5 right now. And I think that that's a number that you can watch to really understand how comfortable a guy's feeling.
Coach, when we're watching the Jazz take on Brooklyn and Brooklyn puts up 130 points, and then we're watching the Jazz take on Detroit and they hold Detroit to 86, and I understand the difference in talent. I get those things, but what are the Jazz doing different when you see a team that's running and scoring and hitting on almost every possession and a lot of open looks as compared to what, you know, what we saw against Detroit, where they were held under 90 points, outside of course, the talent that they're playing against?
Well, I think the Brooklyn game and watching that, and I think sometimes really good offensive teams that can't make shots, you know, this happens to them. And I think the Brooklyn game was one where the Jazz really couldn't ever get anything going offensively, and I think that hurt their defense. You don't ever want to see that, but when teams are built as offensive teams for the most part, and they have guys that all feel like they're shot makers and scorers, when that ball doesn't go in, it's discouraging as all get out. And it's hard sometimes to maintain the level on defense that you do on offense. The thing I loved about last night in that second half, the Jazz did not shoot the ball well. They started out great. You know, the first half, they looked like it was a carryover from the Bucks game. But the second half, they really kind of ran into a wall offensively. The ball started to stick. You know, Detroit was switching things to make it difficult. But the one piece of growth that I saw was the Jazz defensive effort remained totally consistent. And so I think that's a win. You know, I think you look at the difference in that game. And sometimes, you know, you play teams and they just have it going. Hans, you mentioned that Detroit's the worst field goal shooting team in the league. So there's probably part of this that can be attributed to that. But if you just watch the effort and energy and kind of connectedness that the Jazz play with defensively, you can really see when they're on it and when they're struggling. And all it takes is for one guy to be off, right? Not be in his spot. Everybody does their job and one guy doesn't rotate over to the role or, you know, and it can really make the defense look bad. But I think that one thing that the Jazz have done this year is they've improved defensively from last year. You know, I think we had way more games last year where you were like, holy cow, they're just getting torched. This year, I think Donovan, Mike are playing harder defensively. You know, I think that that Rudy's obviously just a beast. But you've got guys who are really kind of stepping up their game. Royce is doing, you know, the very best he can. He's basically got the gauntlet every night. I mean, you just play a team and you look at the number one scorer and you say, Royce, you've got him. And sometimes that's not fair to Royce because, you know, I think he actually has a better – you know, he did a great job guarding Giannis for the most part. Giannis still had 35, but he made him feel those 35. It's when you give guys direct lines and just let them wide open and free. And we just haven't seen as much of that with this Jazz team this year.
When in baseball, the old adage is you know who a team is around Memorial Day. Is there a number of games that you look at NBA-wise and say, you know, is it 15, is it 20, where you get a good feel as to who that team really is?
You know, it is interesting because I looked, you know, I've had a bunch of people ask me about the quote-unquote slow start the Jazz are having. And I went back and looked through all of Quinn's years, and you guys probably already know this, but, yeah, you know, his average as a Jazz coach, what his average through 10 games is?
Ooh.
Hmm.
I'd say
500.
I'd say even a little less. I'd go 450.
He is 5-5.
Look at that.
Average over those years. So, you know, I think 1 year they won 7, and then 1 year they only won 3. But it's been right around. I think the first 10 games is a really big feeling out period, not just for your team, but the league. And I would add another 10 games to this year because of preseason.
Yeah.
You just didn't get that. You know, you didn't get a real training camp, and you didn't get preseason. You know, I was talking to Jake the other night, and Jake brought up a great point during the game. He talked about, you know, with all this COVID stuff and teams getting, you know, not having enough players to field the team, I almost wonder if they should just say, let's not do this G League bubble, and let's let all these teams have 20 guys so that they can always have practice. You know, I'm just trying to think outside the box.
Yeah.
Because it's starting to get a little dicey, and I thought Jake brought up a great point. But I think this year, I think you need to get through 20 games to kind of really see how things even out. You can see right now, I mean, the Jazz have lost 4, and they're one game out of first place in the West. So it's not just them that are kind of figuring it out. It's everybody. I'm a major buy on this Jazz team. I think that as things continue to click, I just like the personnel. I love having Favors to shore up the second group. And I just like the way the team's constructed more than anything.
Tim, how much fear do you have of this season canceling?
Say that again?
How much fear do you have of this season just canceling all out?
Ah, man, it's you know, I've actually felt that way more about college than pro, because I think pro can figure something out. This college thing's starting to become a little nutty, you know, because we're getting closer and closer to playoff, to tournament time. And there's going to be a whole slew of teams that don't have, you know, I mean, how do you have any equity and compare it? I don't think the pro game will cancel. I think they're committed to making it work. But I think we are in for, you know, this next couple months of winter and everything else, man, it's really touch and go.
Do you remember where you were at 10 years ago today?
Do I remember where I was at 10 years ago today? If I look at Facebook or something, maybe. I don't remember where I was yesterday at 2 o'clock.
Well, so. It was a big one. Some guy named Jimmer put up 47 points in the Huntsman Center, 104-79.
10 years ago today?
10 years ago today.
So I have a really cool, Mark Durant's dad, George, painted me a picture of Jimmer shooting that shot.
The half court?
Yeah. So it's kind of like a watercolor of that in my guitar room. It's one of the few basketball things that made it in there, but it's cool. So it's in there. But that's crazy. That's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
16 of 28 from the field, 6 of 9 for 3, 9 for 9 from the free throw line, 47 points. And that was one of many big, big Jimmer days for sure.
You know, my biggest recollection of that is having been at Utah and, you know, obviously knowing the disdain back and forth. When Jimmer made that shot, I kind of walked out toward half court as he was running off to give him 5. And I turned to look, and the Huntsman Center was, you know, they're playing the fight song, and people were, as Utah ran off the floor, Utah fans were genuinely up out of their seats cheering for Jimmer.
Yeah.
No, they really were. It was crazy. Like, they were almost like, all right, this is – really sucks for us, but this is really cool to see. So I'm going to, you know, and they were up cheering for the dude. It was crazy.
Wow. Well, Coach, we appreciate it. Great time as always. And I look forward to catching up again here real soon.
Scotty, I love what you're doing with the Aggies. Keep it rolling.
Oh, thanks, man.
All right.
Thanks, Coach.
Tim Lacombe, Jazz analyst, longtime assistant coach, had a stint at Utah. Also, was roaming the sidelines for BYU as well.